So today is the special day of the appearance of Lord Shri Ram. So on this special day, now we choose something special to talk about the special day itself, which is unusual from our daily Bhagavatam class. So the verse that I have chosen today is from Canto 1, Chapter 3, text number 22. It's on the board, this one. So let's recite this verse and then take it from there. And happy Ram Navami, by the way. Nara devatvam apannah surakarya chikarshaya. Nara devatvam apannah surakarya chikarshaya. Samudra nigrahadini chakre viryan ataparam. Nara, human beings. Devatvam, divinity. Apannaha, having assumed the form of Sura, the demigods. Karya, activities. Chikarshaya, for the purpose of performing. Samudra, the Indian Ocean. Nigrahadini, controlling, etc. Chakre, did. Perform. Viryani, superhuman prowess. Ataparam, thereafter. Translation by His Grace Divine Srila Prabhupada ki. In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Rama in order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods. He exhibited superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheist King Ravana, who was on the other side of the sea. Purport. The personality of Godhead Shri Ram assumed the form of human being and appeared on the earth for the purpose of doing some pleasing work for the demigods or the administrative personalities to maintain the order of the universe. Sometimes great demons and atheists like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu and many others become very famous due to the advancing material civilization by the help of material science and other activities with the spirit of challenging the established order of the Lord. For example, the attempt to fly to other planets by material means is a challenge to the established order. The conditions of each and every planet are different, and different classes of human beings are accommodated there for particular purposes mentioned in the codes of the Lord. But puffed up by tiny success in material advancement, sometimes the godless materialists challenge the existence of God. Ravana was one of them, and he wanted to deport ordinary men to the planet of Indra, heaven, by material means without consideration of the necessary qualifications. Seems like, you know, this is coming back. At one time it was Ravana who wanted to transport human beings to the upper planetary system through building all those stairs which he couldn't finish. And we see the similar attempt by the modern day scientists trying to, you know, deport or export human beings to the other planets like Mars and moons. Mr. Prabhupada warns us, you know, that failure is waiting for them. He wanted a staircase to be built up directly reaching the heavenly planet so that people might not be required to undergo the routine of pious work necessary to enter the planet. Shortcut. He also wanted to perform other acts against the established rule of the Lord. He even challenged the authority of Sri Ram, the personality of Godhead, and kidnapped his wife Sita. Of course, the Lord came to chastise this atheist, answering the prayer and desire of demigods. He therefore took up the challenge of Ravana and the complete activity in the subject is the subject matter of the Ramayana. Because Lord Ramchandra was the personality of Godhead, he exhibited superhuman activities which no human being, including the materially advanced Ravana, could perform. Lord Ramchandra prepared a royal road on the Indian Ocean with the stones that floated on the water. The modern scientists have done research in the area of weightlessness, but it is not possible to bring in weightlessness everywhere, anywhere and everywhere. But because weightlessness is the creation of the Lord, by which he can make the gigantic planets fly and float in the air, he made the stones even within the earth to be weightless and prepared a stone bridge on the sea without any supporting pillar. We know we are talking about the Ram Setu, yeah? This is the display of the power of the Lord. Om Agyanati Virandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmay Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschatyadesatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So, as I mentioned, today is Ram Navami. So while I speak, you know, I endeavor to speak something from the pastimes of Lord Ram, which is quite explicitly and probably fair to say quite emotionally is depicted in the Ramayana. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this verse that I have picked up, in Canto 1, Chapter 3, Sutta Goswami explains to the sages of Naimisharanya a few things regarding incarnations of the Lord. Upon asked the question, you know, what are the various incarnations of the Lord and for what purpose does the Lord incarnate, Sutta Goswami explains that there is a famous verse within this section of Bhagavatam, Ete Chamsa Kalapunsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, that Lord Krishna is the fountainhead, the reservoir of all incarnations. And then he lists that the Lord has got as many incarnations as there are waves in the ocean. The incarnations are unlimited. Then he goes on to list the 22, you know, maybe prominent incarnations in that section. Generally, we hear people talking about the Dasa Avatar, you know, the 10 famous incarnations of the Lord. Now, that is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam anyway, yeah? But it is mentioned, but it does get mentioned elsewhere in the scriptures. In this section of the Bhagavatam, Sutta Goswami mentions the 22 prominent incarnations of the Lord. Some of the incarnations are in human form, some in forms other than human. Or you could actually almost say, you know, in subhuman forms. The reason I say subhumans is because, for that matter, Lord also doesn't become human. He takes the form of a human. There's a difference between taking the form of a human and becoming a human being. So the Lord, as the Acharyas explain us, is always transcendental. He's always Satchit Ananda, you know. But he can take any form and still continue to be Satchit Ananda. So the Lord takes human forms and subhuman forms. The scriptures explain us that even the fish, you know, although it is quite more active than the form of a tree, but the fish is considered lower in species than the tree. For the reason being that the species is measured with its proximity, or maybe there's another word that I can't think of, you know, in terms of the sun. The tree is dependent highly on the sun, whereas the fish is away from the sun. And the sun is a symptom of enlightenment because it gives light. So the further we move away from the sun, the lower the species. Of course, we also know that the consciousness is important. But in terms of the habitat, if you like, the fish is considered lower in species than the trees. Similarly, the Lord takes incarnation in the form of Bhoo Varahadev. And how does Varahadev originate? Kids, how does Varahadev incarnate? Where does he start from? Yes? Brahma's nostril. Now generally, what comes out of nostril, you're already smiling. Generally what comes out of nostril is considered quite obnoxious. You know, it's something that, what we speak of others, even we don't want to see. Our own product. Generally, we are quite proud of our body. But some substance from our body we are not so proud of, you know. We quickly grab a tissue paper. So here we see that Varahadev, you know, he incarnates from the nostril of Brahma. But still he is considered, not only considered, but in fact, he is transcendental. So the point I'm making is that when the Lord incarnates, of course, you know, the form that he takes is glorious, including Lord Narasimhadev, you know. You know, it's quite unique. But it's not so much of the, it's the essence is not so much in the form, but more in the purpose. The essence is not so much the form that the Lord takes, but the purpose for which he takes that form. No. As we say, you know, in our modern terms, they are horses for courses. No. So the Lord takes the appropriate form to fulfill a particular purpose. Now, of course, we also know from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam that the prime purpose of the Lord to, you know, take avatar is to attract us back to Godhead. Okay, fair enough. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord says, no, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. He comes to protect the devotees and kids. And analyze the miscreants. I'm just testing whether you are awake or not, because I know you all know these verses. I also sit in the same Bhakta Prahlad class that you sit. So I know what your teacher teaches you. So the Lord comes to protect the devotees and analyze the miscreants and to re-establish the, you know, principles of religion. But if you summarize all that, the Lord comes down to attract us back to Godhead. Now, because to analyze the miscreants and to protect the devotees, the Lord can also do it from where he is, you know, from his Vaikuntha Dham. No. From his Goloka Vrindavan, he can still accomplish these three objectives. You know, he can kill the miscreant sitting there. He can protect us from sitting there. You know, and he can re-establish the principles of religion from where he is. He does not necessarily has to come down to the earthly planetary system to fulfill these three principles. The prime reason why he comes down is because he is Bhakta Vatsala. He loves to save his devotees. For that reason he comes down. And therefore to attract, you know, those who are not necessarily devotees back to Godhead. So Lord is very attractive. So that's why the pastimes of the Lord are very attractive. Now, if you look at the, you know, innumerable pastimes of the Lord, if you look at the 22 avatars that are, Sutta Goswami mentions to the sages of Naimisharanya, and as I said, they are human forms and they are subhuman forms and non-human forms. Two of the avatars stand out in the human form. And that is Krishna himself and Lord Ramachandra. For the reason being that their pastimes in these two particular forms are quite extensive and thoroughly documented with no end, if you like. And very attractive in everything they do. And they are just absolutely amazing lessons that we learn from each of the pastimes. And we know, you know, from our familiarity with Ramayana and Srimad Bhagavatam, that the pastimes of the Lord in these two different forms, as Krishna and as Lord Ram, are quite opposite, if you like, in one sense. Yeah. In the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita, we see especially in the Bhagavad Gita, we see, you know, Krishna telling us what to do. He gives us that framework, the paradigm within which the human beings are to operate. Lord Ra- and his supremacy, you know, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is quite categorical, very, very clear. You know, there is no doubt. He declares himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Conversely, if you look at, you know, the pastimes of the Ramayana, you know, Lord Ram's supremacy as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is disguised. No, it's covered. Time to time it is mentioned, but it is not so explicit. The people that deal with him do not know that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So two different, you know, a mood of incarnation, if you like. Of course, Ramayana is very emotional, because the fundamental mood in the Ramayana is of sacrifice. And the rasa that is predominant in Ramayana is Vipralamba, the mood of separation. Right from the start, you know, there is separation going on between the families. And then, you know, with Lord Ram and, you know, Mother Sita go to the forest, then there is again separation, etc., which will, you know, probably touch by some little bit later. But there is a mood of sacrifice. Start with the mood of sacrifice. So, Ramayana is not so much about what is right, but it is more about almost like how to make the right right. For example, when Lord Ram is about to be coronated as the king of Ayodhya, we all know, you know, that he was dethroned as the king, you know, within one night, you know, everything changed, became topsy-turvy. On the eve of his coronation, there was jubilation in the city of Ayodhya. People were jumping up and down. Just how we jump up and down on Friday nights. But by the sunrise, you know, everything seemed like Monday morning. And today is Monday morning. Some of us are probably on sick leave today, you know. Or waking from the temple. So, everything changed for Lord Ram, you know, and for that matter, the civilians of Ayodhya, the Ayodhya Vasis, within one night. Lord Ram appeared in the Surya Vamsa, you know, the Sun Dynasty. Whereas we know, no, Krishna appeared in the Chandra Dynasty, Chandra Vamsa. Now, notwithstanding that Lord Ram came in the Surya Vamsa, you know, he is called, you know, and from his ancestors, you know, started with, I don't know all the personalities, but the famous personalities that come in this dynasty are, of course, his father Dasharatha, then Raghu, then Ikshvaku, then Bhagirathi, Harishchand, etc., etc. So this is the Surya Vamsa. Now, notwithstanding that Lord Ram came in the Surya Vamsa, he is known more as Ramachandra. Generally, or not generally, maybe, you know, time to time, Chandra is associated with moon. But Lord Ram comes in the Surya Vamsa, but still he is called Ramachandra. For that matter, actually, our Gaur Nitya, you know, he is Gaur Chandra. But he appeared neither in Surya Vamsa nor in Chandra Vamsa. So how do we understand this? Little bit of philosophy before we go into the pastime. We have to understand, you know, that from the scriptural point of view, the Acharyas explained us that Chandra does not necessarily refer only to the moon or to the Chandra dynasty. Chandra is associated with the, also with the characteristic of someone who is glorious and, say, soothing in nature. And even, you know, in our modern terms, you know, when we say, we will say, you know, somebody, you know, his anger was as blazing as the sun. No? But his mood was as soothing as the moon. No, his mood was as soothing as the moon. because moon come, although the sun is also enlightening, you know, and it gives, you know, brightness and all that, but the sun is also associated with heat. Whereas the moon is also giving light, but it is more associated with smoothness. So that is why Lord Ramchandra is known as Lord Ramchandra. And Srila Prabhupada also writes, you know, that, you know, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramchandra. Now, the four brothers, Lord Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughan, these are all Supreme Personalities of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada explains us in Bhagavatam. You know? Krishna expands as Lord Balaram, and then he expands as the first quadruple. You know? Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha and Pradyumna. So these four personalities then incarnate as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughan. From Vasudev comes Lord Ram. That is why when Manu and Satrupa were praying and meditating on the Lord for him to appear or to give him a son that was as good as, not as good as, that was like God. They wanted a son that was like God. And the mantra they were chanting was, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the same mantra that Dhruv Maharaj chanted. And that's the pastime that's going on at the temple, you know, in our normal Srimad Bhagavatam class. So, they were chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And the reason being Vasudevaya is because this is the Vasudeva from which Lord Ram expands. So Lord Ram expands, Vasudeva expands as Lord Ram, Sankarshan expands as Lord Lakshman, and a lot of us know us, no, that Lakshman is the Sankarshan avatar. And then from Aniruddha and Pradyumna come Bharat and Shatrughan. So that is the background, if you like. So, Lord Ram's problems, and I'm saying this a bit carefully, you know, that, you know, the Lord, in the pastime of Ramayana, the Lord takes the form of a human being and he displays the characteristic of an ideal human being. You know. So his pastimes, his behavior, you know, his stand, his actions are those that you can relate with a human being, which is us. You know. So he demonstrates to us how to be an ideal human being. The underlying character, the underlying question of the Ramayana is that when people were asking, you know, is there an ideal human being? And that is the background to the documentation of Ramayana, because Lord Ram manifests that ideal human being characteristic. The fundamental or the underlying question of Mahabharata is what is dharma? The underlying philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam is, you know, how to develop love of Godhead. So Ramayana is based on the idealistic characteristic of a human being. So in that mood, when the Lord descends or takes incarnation, by the way, the difference between incarnation and expansion, Srila Prabhupada uses this word quite, not interchangeably, but frequently in his books, you know, incarnation and expansion, and the plenary portions. They've got different technical meanings. Just very quickly on two of them. Expansion means, you know, when the Lord Krishna is there, ete chamsa kala punsa krishnas tu bhagavan swam. So he expands into different forms, you know, as Balaram, the quadruple expansion, then the three Vishnu forms, you know, etc. So that's in expansion. In the Rasa Leela, the Lord expands as different Krishnas. That's expansions. Incarnation means, you know, avatar in Hindi, in Sanskrit we say. Avatar means to come from the top to the bottom. So Lord expands into different forms in his abode, in Vaikuntha Lok. But when any of those forms descend to the lower planetary system, generally earthly planetary system, that is called the process of incarnation, coming down, avatar, you know. So Lord Ramchandra is an expansion of Krishna. He is also an incarnation. He incarnates from transcendental abode to the materialistic abode of earthly planetary system. So that's incarnation. So when Lord Ram incarnates, comes down to Ayodhya, he displays the form of an idealistic human being. And his problem starts at home only. Sooner or later, We all face problems. Any exceptions? No. Okay. We are all on the same page.
Always problem.
Always, not for you. You mean for your patients. So sooner or later we all face problems. Lord Ram also faced problems starting from home only. Very famous fast time, but I'll, you know, quickly, oh my God, it's already 8:45. When we start listening to Ram Katha, we lose track of time.
Longer?
Okay. And there's no prasadam as well, right? So 7 days, 7 nights, is that okay? No, we won't go that long. I'm sure I'll be the only one remaining here. Okay. Thank you for the moral support. So the Lord, for the Lord, the problem started home only, no? And as we all know, the famous pastime, He is about to be coronated as the king of Ayodhya. And within one night, everything changes for Him, no? From total brightness to total darkness. And amongst all these, He displays to us how to deal with adversity with dignity. Now we all face problems, we all face adversities, no? But how to deal with them with dignity? So if you look at the pastime, when he's about to be coronated, his stepmother, Kaikeyi, she makes mantra, manipulates her. And no, she gets bewildered in terms of what is right and what is wrong. And we all know that she chooses the wrong action, you know, of asking her husband, Dasarath Maharaj, for the two boons that she had parked before, and now she tries to, you know, retrieve them and use it to her advantage. Two fundamental mistakes that Kaikeyi makes, no, which is another subject matter which I won't go into, but just suffice to say, you know, that the two fundamental mistakes she makes is, one, she listens to mantra with submission. We are all encouraged to listen attentively and submissively. But it is also important to know whom to listen attentively and submissively. Mantra in the Ramayana depicts our mind, man, mantra. So here, Kaikeyi listens very submissively towards two mantra, you know, who has got ulterior motives. Yeah, she is coming from the point of nepotism, you know, of raising her own closely knitted Bharat. Because, you know, they were related through that familial relationship to be appointed as the king of Ayodhya and not Lord Ram. So she, Kaikeyi, makes the mistake of listening to mantra submissively, first mistake. Second mistake she makes is that she does not go and consult anybody else to verify whether, you know, such a, if you think of it, you know, to dethrone somebody from the prime ministership of the country, you got to think carefully, firstly, correct? Secondly, if you think that you are making a decision that is quite fundamentally different from the expectations that is existing, you got to verify, you know, cross-check your opinion. She makes that second mistake as well, of cross-checking her decision with somebody senior. And that is why, you know, having a mentor or a guide or a guru becomes important in life. And we know Krishna tells us that Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya. Now you are away. But so am I. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samsapana. No. I'm away. I'm sleeping now. No. How to inquire submissively? How is that? Paripatena sevaya. Pariprasnena sevaya. So, inquire submissively from a spiritual master for directions. So, if you see the Lord's Ram reaction to this adversity of being disowned and dethroned and dispossessed, he was not only told to get out of the house, he was also told that you cannot enter anybody else's house. Now that is a very, you know, difficult position to be in. If we put ourselves into it, you know, if we get, biggest fear these days tends to be, you know, that we may get redundant. So imagine a day, you know, when we have been thrown out of the office, and we come home and we are also thrown out of our house. In Hindi they say, na ghar ka, na ghat ka hua. They have got no base anywhere. So Lord Ram finds himself in this kind of situation, you know. He is told that you cannot live in this house, and you cannot also enter anybody else's house in Ayodhya, you know. You have to, you know, get out of the entire kingdom to live in the forest, you know, where the only companions are, you know, the tigers and the bears. No shelter, you know, no tap water, no luxury of, you know, sleeping on, you know, comfortable
bed.
Yeah, king size bed. So very, very austere life he was supposed to be, he was told to be lead. What is his response? His response is then, firstly, when Mother Kekayi tells him that this is the boon that I have asked of Dasharatha, and therefore, you know, you have to, unfortunately, or fortunately, from her point of view, leave Ayodhya so that Bharat can be coronated as the king, and you have to live in exile for 14 years. Ram's reaction is that, how do I deal with this adversity, with the point of, this one central point within which he operates, is that, how do I minimize the distress of everybody at the moment? Now, if you think of it, of all the people affected, he is the one who is the most affected. Now, when we are given, you know, if we are promised a particular position, you know, in the office, in the temple, in the family, anywhere, just being, you know, imagine, you know, on the night before you are told, you know, just get out of here. It will affect us, yeah? Our first response will be, who? Why? Where? Who did this to me? No? Let me find the culprit so that I can get square with him. Yeah? Natural, yeah? It's mine. My, you know, it's all mine, and it was mine. I have not done anything wrong that I should be punished for this. So why is it happening to me? So we will go on a blaming scheme. Who did this? Why did it happen to me? Can we fit this now? Can we rethink? Can I be appointed again? All this why? And then we'll come to the temple and even blame the Lord, you know, why did you do this to me? Was it only me that you had to choose today? After all, I'm not such a bad devotee. I mean, I chant 16 rounds, you know, and follow four regulative principles. And you say, you know, that sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vaja, you know. Surrender unto me and I will take away all your miseries, you know, and all your reactions. But today I am getting the heaviest reaction of my life. You know. Not only I got, you know, told by the boss to pack your bag, and he actually packed my bag, but I've also been, you know, told by the spouse not to enter this house. Dogs and redundants are not allowed in this house. Imagine that kind of situation. So we start blaming God. No, for our own reactions. But Lord Ram takes a completely different stand. He says, his thinking process is, what do I do to minimize the distress of everybody concerned at the moment? So from a distress maximizer, which most probably I will be in that bucket, to be honest, being honest with you, he tries to be the stress minimizer. How does he achieve this? Firstly, he tells Kaikeyi that, I'm not sure why were you so hesitant to tell me these two things, that I have to go to the forest and Bharat has to be appointed as the king. I don't understand why were you so hesitant to tell me this when these two subject matters are quite trivial to me. Initially he trivializes the whole issue into non-significance. The fact is, this is quite big. It's the biggest event happening, you know, in the Ayodhya at that point in time. All the news is, you know, on Ayodhya, you know, Channel 9, Channel 7, Foxtel. Everybody is looking, you know, how they look at the South African match going at the moment, because there is ball tampering. So entire globe is bombarded with, you know, what's his name? Cameron Bancroft, you know, ball tampering. So like that kind of focus, you know, is on Ayodhya, that Lord is about to get coronated as the king. So notwithstanding is such a significant event, you know, the biggest in the history of mankind, if you like. Lord trivializes into, you know, why are you hesitant to tell me such a trivial thing? In our life, when we go through problems, our mind, which is mantra in this pastime, if you like, also magnifies the problem so much that the mind tells us that this is the biggest problem ever on it. So it magnifies it and also then makes it, magnifies and eternalizes it. That this problem is going to be with you forever in life. And we get sucked into that mindset of, you know, just being into the problem, not knowing how to get out of it. One way to get out of a problem is firstly to trivialize it. To say, I've been through so many problems. And they came, and a lot of them went away. And this will also go away. Mata is prasastu kaunteya, you know. The problems will come and go. So why bother about something that is, you know, just part of life? If you look at Lord Ram's problem at the moment, you know, there are three types of problems. You know, we can put our problems into three different categories if you like. First category is the ongoing problems. You know, like a bad boss in the office, a difficult relative to deal with, back problem, you know, which we can't sit down properly, we need, you know, disabled parking towards the back wall. You know. Those are ongoing problems in life. All we can do is get used to it. The other types of problems in life can be those that are very sudden. So this is ongoing problems and then they are sudden problems. For example, if you're driving on the road, you know, especially on the Australian roads, you don't expect a pothole. So you're cruising at 100 kilometers per hour on the freeway. And then all of a sudden, if there is a pothole, it's like a sudden problem. You know, I didn't expect this, and there is a problem. Then I have to, you know, deal with this. Compared to, you know, let's say if you're driving in India, it's like if there is no pothole, then it's no, it's a, then it's, then it, then it's a different mindset. Oh my God, there is no pothole. I was recently traveling from Vrindavan to Delhi. You know, so I've got this experience from going through all the side roads. As soon as you enter Yamuna Freeway, then it's like, oh my God, you know, this is like heaven. There's no cows, you know, there's no human beings, you know, on the, it's all cars, and you just cruise at 100 kilometers per hour. Fantastic freeway. So those are the sudden problems in life that you have to deal with, you know, in a knee-jerk reaction, if you like. Then the third type of problem, which is what Lord Ram is facing at the moment, and we may have also been through from time to time, are the problems when, let's say we see somebody after a long time, one of our, you know, old mates. We, you know, bahut din baad, you know, very, very long time we see somebody that we were very close with, you know, our close friend. In Bollywood, as they say, you know, they got separated during the Mela, you know, during the festival. So after a long time, they come back again and then see each other, you know. This is my friend Chingu, you know, Changu and Mangu, you know, when they meet after a long time. So when they meet after a long time, you know, one of them is going to the other person, you know, to get this love and affection. Oh my God, you know, I'm seeing you after 15 years. At that time you were looking so different. Now you don't have any hair on your head. What happened, you know? Transformation is going on. So something like that, you know. You go to him with so much of, you know, expectation of love and affection. And you get closer to him and he gives you a big slap. And you're like, oh my God. Another type of problem, right? There's an ongoing problem and there's a sudden problem. And this is, I'm expecting affection and I'm getting a smack. So this is like double whammy. Firstly, there is no affection. Secondly, you know, there is embarrassment. This is where Lord Ram is at the moment. Climax. Lord Ram is expecting love and affection from the civilians and from his parents. And from everybody else concerned. But what he gets in return is a slap from his stepmother. Now this is difficult to deal with if we put ourselves into that kind of position. But he says, mother, why were you so hesitant to ask me something so trivial? No? And he moves on. So then he goes, then Lakshman enters the scene. And I've told you Lakshman is the incarnation of, you know, Sheshnag, Sankarshan. So he is furious. Lakshman gets depicted in the Ramayana as very furious, very, very dedicated to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And anything that comes in between the service, and the pleasure of the Lord, then that has to be removed. You know, so his anger has got basis. He's not angry because, you know, he is anger personified. No, not like that. He's angry if something is coming between him and devotional service. If something is coming between the, you know, for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he, you know, exhibits his anger. Otherwise, he also comes across as very cool, calm and collective. Yeah. So Lakshman is furious. And in that kind of furiousness, he says that, he makes a very interesting statement. He says that this king has lost his intelligence because of his lusty dedication to his youngest wife. Now that is his reaction to this episode. He does not even acknowledge Dasarath as his father. Now, in that angry mood, he doesn't say our father has lost his intelligence. This king, not our father, this king has lost his intelligence because of his, you know, lusty involvement with his, you know, dearest and youngest wife. Lord Ram responds again. See how Lord Ram is, you know, enacting his pastime as an idealistic human being. Firstly, trivializes the problem. Secondly, he says, oh Lakshman, you don't know how much suffering our father is going through at the moment. You just have no comprehension of the magnitude of the suffering that our father is going through at the moment. He is not the cause of what is happening. Do not blame him. Now, Lakshman, of course, you know, is not fully soothed by this, not fully convinced. So then, you know, the discussion goes on, and I'm now trying to fast forward. Then Lakshman says that whoever's fault it is now, I don't care. All I want is that, you know, you are the rightful heir to the throne, and therefore you should be established as the king of Ayodhya, no matter what. And if required, I am going to take up my bow and arrow towards the military of Ayodhya, for which the commander-in-chief is Dasarath. I am prepared to take my bow and arrow to make sure that you are appointed as the king. Let there be mutiny in the society. No. Let this king be removed by force so that the rightful prince is put on the throne. Now Lord Ram takes this as serious, because when Lakshman threatens with bow and arrow, this is very similar to how Arjuna threatens. When the Kshatriyas threaten, it's not like our words, you know. Sometimes when we are angry, we make heavy words, hoping that the other person, you know, just kind of calms down. But if the other person becomes heavy, we start retracting, you know, to say, now we are in trouble. This is getting into double trouble now. So, you know, we start, you know, maybe taking, you know, few tracks back. But when Kshatriyas make that kind of statements, you know, they mean it. They are ready for war. Again, what does Ram say? Lord Ram's response is, Lakshman, if you want me to be coronated as the king, if you are ready to take up the bow and arrow against our father, know that your arrows, the tip of your arrows has to pass through my heart first. Because in between you and king is me. I'm not going to fight with you, but your arrows have to pierce my heart first. Now Lakshman starts getting into some kind of, you know, analysis to say, this is heavy, what do I do? Knowing that he is losing these two arguments with Lord Ram, he comes up with the third agenda. He says, Ram, if you are so insistent on going to the for exilement and living in the forest, I will come with you. There is no meaning to my life without service to you. So I will come to you. And see how Lord Ram, you know, is such a reciprocative personality. Krishna tells us, you know, that yatha mam prapadyante, you know, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So here, when Lord Ram says that Lakshman has lost two battles already, firstly about the mutiny, firstly about, you know, injustice to the king, and secondly about the mutiny, when Lakshman puts forth the third agenda, you know, that I want to come with you, Lord Ram accepts it. Of course, there is little bit of refute at the beginning, but at the end, Lord Ram says, you know, Lakshman, you lost two battles, so I'm happy to concede one. This time I'll let you go, you know, so you can come with me. So, In our relationships, you know, there is not always about us, you know, win, 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 win for us. You know. When there is a loving exchange, sometimes we have to let things go even if we think that we are right. In this position, Lord Ram knows that he is right. It's not just for him to go to the forest. You know, it's injustice. But he's still ready to go. Why? Because the mood of Ramayana is one of sacrifice. I will sacrifice my promotion just to keep the words of my father. I'll sacrifice. Then he knows that it is not necessary for Lakshman to come with him to the forest. As it is, it's no fault of Ram to go to the forest. Secondly, to get another one with him, buy one, get one free package, that is double injustice. Why does he has to come? After all, he's also newly wed, you know, and you know, he deserves that royal luxury that he's entitled to. So why does he has to come to the forest? But Lord Ram gives in to Lakshman's demand, you know, and permits him to join him to the Vanvas. Then, now I'm going to jump a lot of pastimes now because it's 9 o'clock. I'm going to jump a lot of them. I'm just going to cherry pick whatever I think, you know, I can speak for the next 5 minutes maybe. And I'm sure you will have questions as well.
Till 9:30.
Okay, Jai. Vice President has said 9:30. No more mutiny against me. Okay. I'll jump Kaushalya pastime, but I'll go into Sita. How does he deal with Mother Sita? Mother Sita says that I want to join you to the forest. No, I'm going to join you to the forest as well. So Ram has to deal with one by one, each of them, telling them that you cannot come, because it's my exilement. No, none of your fault, so you don't have to come. So Ram tells Mother Sita, you know, that in the forest, you know, you will not get the luxury that you are so used to. You are the daughter of Maharaj Janak. You know, you have grew up, you know, in a palace, you know, when there are no thorns on your way, you know, it's all polished marble, there are maidservants looking after you. This kind of comfort you will not find in the forest. In the forest, what you get, you know, if anything, you know, sleeping on the grass, you know, the sounds of the tigers will be your only alarm clock in the morning. You know. If you are lucky, you will get food, you know, stomach will be rumbling. The maximum you get is, you know, fruits and nuts, water maybe, you know, if we can find a borehole, you know, or some placid lake. So don't underestimate, you know, the hardship or the austerity that, you know, is there for 14 years in the forest. Now just pick this up. The way he tells Mother Sita is a very magnified problem. So there is time when we have to deal with situations as it demands. So here he is telling Mother Sita that 14 years is a very long time, my dear. You know, you will get burnt out. Please, you know, stay here and save my parents. That is your duty. Now Mother Sita's response, interesting. She says, just now you were telling Kaushalya, Mother Kaushalya, that the duty of the wife is to save the husband. And that's why you stopped her from coming to the forest with you. First duty of Mother Kaushalya is to look after Maharaj Dasarath at the moment. And for me, you are saying staying in the forest, then how can I fulfill my duty of saving the husband? So Mother Sita makes that's Mother Sita, by the way, now, willing to come with the husband to the forest. I'm not sure whether most of us will be that lucky, you know. Maybe some of us, you know. If we decide, you know, to go to let's say some deserts in, you know, South Africa for preaching, I'm not sure how many company we will find. Anyway. So Mother Sita says that it may be difficult to live in the forest with you. That I can agree with. It may be difficult to live in the forest with you. But one thing is for sure, that I cannot live in the palace alone. I will die without you. In that separation, I will die. Very heavy statement. So Lord Ram again finally agrees to Mother Sita to accompany her, accompany him to the forest as well. So with all these personalities, he has somehow or the other minimized their problem. But he knows that Lakshman and Sita's problem is magnified if they stay in the palace. Because Lakshman's mood of service to Lord Ram is so strong that he will not be able to live in the palace. So he grants them to join him. Mother Sita's problem will also be maximized if she is left alone in the palace. So he grants her to join him. But with the others, he tries to trivialize the problem and then say, you know, you stay here. For that matter, he tells, Lakshman tells his wife, what was the name?
Urmila.
That your Lakshman tells Urmila that my responsibility is to save. I've got two roles. I've got two duties. I'm a younger brother of Lord Ram, so I have to save Lord Ram. And I'm also the son of Dasarath, so I have to save Dasarath. You know, I'm a son and I'm a younger brother. Now, I cannot make a Xerox copy of me. So, you are my Ardhangini, you know, you are my better half. So, between us, we'll divide our roles. I will take care of my elder brother. You take care of my father. And that is your duty. So again, Ramayana is based a lot on what is our duty. And there is the demonstration of the duty, you know, rather than just the philosophical understanding of what the duty is. You know, to walk the talk. You know, to talk is easy, but to walk the talk is hard, you know, especially in adversity. So Ramayana characteristics, you know, idealistic characteristics showing us how to walk the talk. Now, one more pastime and then I'll stop. When Ram finally goes to the forest, you know, in exilement for 14 years, Ram, Lakshman and Mother Sita, Bharat, when he returns from his meeting his in-laws, comes to find out, you know, that so much has happened in Ayodhya in his absence. And as we all know, he is absolutely devastated, you know, to find out the news that his dear brother has been banished. From a Vedic scriptural point of view, banishment for someone, you know, from the kingdom is considered a very, very extremely severe punishment. Actually, it is the second highest level of punishment. First level of punishment is execution. Capital punishment, you know. Second level of punishment is when somebody is exiled and banished, you know, from the kingdom. So if you look at Lord Ram, you know, he's coming through the second most severe level of punishment for some crime that he has not even committed. And Bharat Maharaj, you know, who is the incarnation of Dharma, when he sees all this, he is absolutely devastated because he does not have any ulterior motive. So long story short then, as we know, he decides to go to the forest to persuade Lord Ram to come back to Ayodhya. And when he decides to go, there is again another surge of jubilation in the society because they see the light at the end of the tunnel, notwithstanding that it was a very dim light. You know, some chance. Actually, from their point of view, you know, they were quite convinced, seeing Bharat's reaction and his conviction that Lord Ram is the proper and the rightful heir to the throne, they were convinced that Lord Ram will return to Ayodhya, you know, and become their king. So with that kind of expectation and aspiration, you know, they march forward to the forest. And finally, you know, they meet him at Chitrakoot. This is where Lord Ram had decided to make his, you know, temporary residence. Unlike us, you know, who endeavor to make our permanent residence. Lord Ram knows that the forest is only temporary. So in a temporary place, make only a temporary residence. We want a permanent residence in a place that is temporary. Dukhalayam Ashaswatam, Krishna tells us that this whole place is temporary, but we want permanent house. So not possible. So Lord Ram makes some temporary arrangements in Chitrakoot. So when Bharat finally discovers, you know, where Lord Ram is and reaches him, and insofar he has been quite convinced, you know, that he can persuade Lord Ram to return because he sees no reason why he should not. firstly. Secondly, he knows, Bharat knows that he does not want to be the king, and he's quite firm about it. So with these two, you know, propositions, he's quite convinced of the, you know, a successful outcome to his ensuing meeting with Lord Ram. Now, and behold, when he meets Lord Ram, he faces another level of trouble now. Unlike the other calamities that, you know, we see in the scriptures, you know, of trials and tribulations, this one is quite sweet. This, if you like, debate, a healthy debate between Ram and Bharat is very, very sweet and enriching. Why? So if you see that, again, both of them are opposed. Ram is, Bharat is hell-bent on bringing Ram back to Ayodhya and putting him as the king. And Ram is, you know, hell-bent on not going to Ayodhya and living in the forest to uphold the words of his father. So extreme views again, clashing. But the clash is very sweet. Why? Because unlike other clashes, when it's more about, you know, it's more about me and me and me, here the clash is more about you and you and you, you know. Bharat is concerned about Ram's welfare. Ram is concerned about Bharat's welfare and his father's words that has to be withheld. So Bharat keeps pursuing, you know, Ram to return. And he says, you know, that this is yours, so please accept it. Even Mother Kekai puts injunction that the words that I had taken from Maharaj Dasharath, I take it back now. The boons were, you know, he had given the boons to me, and I asked him for the two boons of, you know, the Bharat being the king and you being in exilement. I withdraw it. So on that basis, you know, Ram, you return to Ayodhya. Of course, as we know, Lord Ram has got another plan in mind. He has to finally reach Lanka. So all these pastimes are enacted for him to kind of get detached from Ayodhya and fulfill the mission for which he has taken avatar, you know, of reaching Lanka. Why does Lord Ram has to reach Lanka eventually? No. That's the secondary reason. What's the primary reason?
To meet Vibhishan.
Paritranaya sadhuna vinashaya cha duskritam. The primary reason of the Lord always is to paritranaya sadhuna, you know, to save his devotees, to protect his devotees. So Lord Ram has to reach Lanka because there is Vibhishan, his pure devotee, waiting for him. So all these pastimes, you know, is enacted so that he can reach Vibhishan. Secondary reason is to kill Ravana, which he could have actually also empowered Hanuman to do it on his first visit. But Lord Hanumanji had multiple visas. So he went once, you know, and then he thought, you know, on the second visa when he goes, you know, flies over on, you know, Hanuman Airlines. Then he thought, you know, he'll take care of Ravan. But he could have easily brought Sita back, you know, to the mainland and killed Ravan in first go. He had pretty much burnt the entire city anyway, brought it to ashes. But then there was a Maya Nagari created, you know, illusory Lanka was created. All that for another day. So, Lord Ram knows that he has to reach Vibhishan, you know, to meet his pure devotee, to reach Lanka to meet Vibhishan, his pure devotee. So, he has to do all these episodes of, you know, trying to stay in the forest. But, insofar he says that, Bharat, you know, you have to, you know, look after the kingdom, and I have to, you know, uphold the words of my father. So, finally, when in this dispute, healthy debate comes to its climax of, you know, we don't know which party is more stronger now, you know. Whether Bharat's proposition of, you know, Ram returning to Ayodhya is more justified and more sincere, or whether Ram's standoff, staying in the forest, withholding the words of his father is more justified and more sincere. No. Seems like a dharma shankar. No. Dharma shankar is when two dharmas are opposing and you don't know which one is the higher. Yeah? Conflict of religious principles. Both are in accordance with the religious principles. We don't know which one is the highest. So, sometimes we make the mistake of confusing dharma sankat, which is conflict with two religious principles, misunderstanding it as a conflict between religion and irreligion. A lot of times in our mind, you know, we face situations when we are confused between dharma and adharma. Dharma and adharma, and we call it dharma sankat. There is no dharma sankat. You know. That is very clear. There is one is dharma, the other one is adharma. Religious conflict is when both principles are bona fide. No, it has got, it is genuine, which ones to uphold now. So here, Bharat's dharma of duty to his elder brother, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is bona fide. No, because it's, you know, Jivara Sarupa Hai Krishna and Nitya Das. So his duty is to save Lord Ram in any capacity. So therefore he should return to Ayodhya. And Lord's Ram dharma of, you know, obedience to the words of his father, Raghukula Rita Sadachali Ai, Prana Jai Par Vachana Na Jai. The Raghukula Rit, you know, the oath of the dynasty has to be withheld at any cost, even if the life is to be given. You know, that is how solid they were. As Radha Gopinath Prabhu tells us in SSRCD, you know, the words of those times were like lines on the rock. Once you mark it, it cannot be erased. Words of today are like lines in the water. Before you finish it, 99% is already gone. You know? So that's Kali Yuga versus Treta Yuga. So, how does this get resolved? It was so tense that it was actually beyond, you know, the greatest of sages present at that time. Vasishtha Muni, Vishwamitra. He comes as the mediator, you know, eventually. So then, on the auspicious arrival of Maharaj Janak, and as we know, you know, Janak Maharaj is one of the 12 Mahajans listed, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Maharaj Janak is called upon, you know, to resolve the healthy conflict between two brothers of, you know, who is more rightful, interesting outcome he gives. Firstly, he says that of this tension between the two brothers, Bharat, you come across as victorious. You come across as victorious. Why? Because your love for Lord Ram is unconditional, without any ulterior motive. There is no selfishness in your desire. Your love is very pure. And when the love is very pure, the Lord has to succumb to the desire of the devotees. And we see in the pastime of Kurukshetra as well. You know, Bhishma Dev's desire to make Krishna fight, you know, is very pure. And Krishna has taken the vow, you know, that he will not take any weapons in the battle of Kurukshetra. But just to uphold, and Krishna has also given the vow in the Bhagavad Gita that declare boldly, Arjuna, my devotees will never perish. So again, Krishna himself is in Dharma Sankat now. He has said that declare my devotees will never perish. And secondly, Bhishma Dev has taken a vow that he will make Krishna fight. So which principle does Krishna withhold now? His own declaration that my devotees will never perish. Or making, you know, and his own vow that he will not fight. Krishna has taken a stand that he will not fight in Kurukshetra. And then Bhishma Dev's vow, you know, that he will make Krishna fight. So of course we know, you know, that Krishna took up that wheel of the chariot to uphold, you know, his devotee. His devotees will never perish, to the extent that his own words had to be, you know, secondary. So similarly here, Janak Maharaj tells, you know, that Lord Ram, this personality in front of you, Bharat, you know, his intentions are pure, his desires are pure, you know, he's got nothing ulterior in his motive. And therefore, on this occasion, you know, his love wins over your words. So everybody gets excited. Bharat ki jai ho. Now that Bharat is victorious in this debate, Lord Ram has to come back to Ayodhya. There is entire jubilation in that, you know, mediation assembly. Then, Janak Maharaj drops the bombshell. Second part of the resolution. He tells Bharat Maharaj, and this is the takeaway for all of us, and I'll stop. He tells Bharat then, your love has won today. But love has
got a particular requirement. When we love somebody, we do what the lover wants you to do, not what you want to do to the lover. Love has got no requirements, but one thing that's fundamental within unconditional love is that it has to be unconditional, not on my conditions. So if you think of it, Bharat's love to Ram is actually in one way pure, but it is conditional. That I want you to come to Ayodhya. So my desire has to, the love is on my terms. Okay, not necessarily. You know, the resolution is on my terms. I want you to come back, and I know you don't want to come back, but you have to come back because I want you to come back. So maybe he's worried about his reputation or whatever, whatever. But the point is, it's on his terms. So Janak Maharaj corrects his attitude, which is the same correction that Srila Prabhupada corrects us time and time again in the pages of his books. That love is unconditional. We do as the Lord wants us to do. As Chaitanya Charan Prabhu says, you know, lot of time when we are into calamities, we want the Lord's power and our intelligence. Oh my Lord, I know how to deal with this. I've got it all set out. I've got a master plan for all this problem. But I don't have the power to solve it. So can I just borrow your power and use my intelligence to come out of this problem? Whereas, you know, unconditional love means, Lord, I'm a fool number one, you know, and I have got no powers. I'm dedicated to you, you know, I'm surrendering to you. Please help me solve this according to your terms. And a lot of times, you know, we find that the solution is not necessarily forthcoming. And we, you know, perhaps at times, you know, start shaking our faith in the whole process. But what acharyas tell us, that whatever happens to us is always benevolent. Krishna's response to us might not be immediate, or at least it might not be in the form that we expect. But in the long term, it is certainly benevolent. Whatever happens is for our own good. That part is confirmed. Because Krishna's devotees will never perish. So he will put us into test from time to time. But we have to remember, you know, that the solution will come according to Krishna's terms and according to our level of surrender. So here Janak Maharaj tells Bharat that you are victorious in your pure heart, being pure-hearted. But you have to save Lord Ram according to Lord Ram's desire. So now, go and ask Lord Ram submissively, what is his desire? So this is called, you know, in a conflict resolution in the modern day management, it is called a win-win situation. Yes. Now, win-win situation. Bharat is the winner, but not necessarily the ultimate winner. So Ram is the ultimate winner because he gets the final say. So fast forward, when Bharat goes to Ram and then says, no, oh my Lord, my eyes have been opened with the torchlight of knowledge. Now you know that I am corrected by Janak Maharaj, you know, that it's not just my love that has to be pure, but my desire has to be dovetailed into oneness of your desire, which Srila Prabhupada explains us. You know, my desire has to be dovetailed into oneness of your desire. Please instruct me. Sadhimam tuam prapanna. Please instruct me, what is your desire? What should I do? And as we know, Lord is very bhavagrahi. He also, when he was so, let's say stubborn, or was he was so firm to uphold the words of his father, now he finds again that win-win situation, you know, the middle ground. Bharat, I accept the offering that you have come to give to me. Patram pushpam phalam tvayam, in the royal throne. Whatever is offered to me with love, I will accept it. That Krishna guarantees us. So because Dasarath is offering the kingship of Ayodhya with so much of love to Lord Ram, he has to accept it. Bhakti amam, you know, with love and affection, he has to accept it. But then he says, just so that, no, our father's words are also withheld, why don't you manage this kingship for me for 14 years as a caretaker government? So the whole Ramayana is very emotional because this mood of sacrifice is ongoing. Vipralambar and sacrifice is ongoing. There is win, there is loss. There is win, there is loss. And our life is like that. Troubles keep coming to us. You know, there is joy, then there is trouble. There is joy, there is trouble.
The lessons learned from, you know, that I try to take away from the Ramayana is that, you know, the troubles will come in life. Don't magnify it. Try to trivialize it. What is most important is the Sharanagati, you know, to Lord Ram, to Krishna. To say, you know, that Chaitanya Prabhu, and I'll conclude with this particular words that, you know, kind of struck with me that he uses, which I've used before as well, you know, that do not tell Krishna how big our problem is. Do not tell Krishna how big our problem is. Tell the problem how big Krishna is. And therefore the problems will immediately becoming, you know, put into place. And then find a resolution to move forward. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ji ki. Now, before we go into Q&A, and I know it's getting 9:30 as well, today is a very auspicious day of Ram Navami, and His Grace Prabhu has got some very sentimental attachment to this particular date. For the reasons, I humbly request Prabhu you to share for whatever time you need. You know. Krishna, can you pass this to Prabhu?
Today is also a day when Krishna Balaram Mandir was opened in Vrindavan.
Philip Prabhu.
48 years ago.
Philip Prabhu.
That's 1975. So it's a very special day. Srila Prabhupada opened the temple. And so it's a very big event. I chose this particular day, Ram Navami. And that's the day also Srila Prabhupada initiated 100 devotees in the morning before the installation of Krishna Balaram and Ramachandra Chandra and Shishi Govindai on this day. Srila Prabhupada went for a morning walk and he came back after the morning walk and straight away there was an initiation ceremony. And then, in fact, at 12 o'clock they had they took all the deities that they were on the during the morning program, you can see the deities that were tied, their eyes were tied, and then they brought them in. And I was a small kid, and I used to go, so look at this, this must be the Krishna Balaram, because they just had gopins, and eyes were closed with the cloth, covered with the cloth, and then big, big ceremony. And Srila Prabhupada, there's a famous picture of Srila Prabhupada, he's doing the Chamara Arati to Krishna Balaram appeared in the magazine, Bhaktivedanta magazine. Before the initiation, Srila Prabhupada wanted that all the devotees visiting, actually Mayapur festival, right after that is Vrindavan festival, Gopurnima. And then all the devotees, we had a group photo with Prabhupada because opening day is a very historic. And Srila Prabhupada was, there's a photo of Prabhupada in the front and all the devotees around. Mataji is on the roof of the temple. That photo became the cover picture of the Bhaktivedanta magazine that year. And I was just sitting just next to Prabhupada, but you can hardly see, it's a black dot. It's so small. And
in the picture.
Yeah. So what I want to say also, among the 100 devotees, I was also got the initiation. 1970, that's 48 years ago. And just a few years ago, they had their 40th anniversary. I was living in China. So I ask for all of your blessings so I can continue and develop more love for Prabhupada in thousand folds by your. Because we have material father and mother, but also our real parents are our spiritual master who give us the spiritual birth. Initiation is a spiritual birth. So I just wanted to share with you today this story of your Prabhupada. Thank you very much. And one more thing about this Ram. I heard this story that Lord Ram, when he was in the forest, he was actually having a very good time in the forest. It's not like us going in the forest and we don't have anything to eat and, you know, we have to take over, you know, backpack and water and, you know, water, you know, Kerala and stuff. He is having free time to go around. And so this is all Leela, of course. And then it's mentioned that the sages, they were Lord Ram, in this temple, sometimes you see the Ramchari is never around on the weekend. They're having some prasadam, some vifat, perhaps. So, because someone is telling these guys that they have invitation every day, so don't worry about that, because I was saying I want to cook for them. So Lord Ram was in the forest having a pretty good time, because the sages, they're inviting Lord Ram and Sita Lakshman every day. They're cottages, and not just fruit, they have other things. So the sages were gopis. They took brother sages to take care of Lord Ram, because they already knew that they were going to, Lord Ram and Sita Lakshman, they're going to be in the forest. Just wanted to share this story.
They are gopis.
They become
gopis
in the Krishna's past. Yeah, they become gopis, and then they also took birth as sages.
Yeah,
in the past.
Sages took birth as gopis, and gopis took birth as sages.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I'll just take one or two questions to try and see if anybody has to go and feel free to leave. Ramayana is a very subjective topic. I'm trying my best, hopefully, from the support of the Lego and others. Let's see if I can answer some questions.
What is the basis of the promised boom? How Keke is served?
So, what are the questions on the basis of Keke being granted those boons? My understanding is that there was a time in one particular battlefield, a battle, when Dasarath got hurt. Up till that point in time, he was always victorious. But in this particular battle, he was hurt, to the point of perhaps losing his body. And at that time, Degay, who was his charioteer, took him away from the danger and saved his life. And then being saved, Maharaj Dasarath, as a reciprocation, granted Kekai two boons, which Kekai said that I will ask whenever the need arises. So unfortunately, she took advantage of them at the wrong point in time, being manipulated by Mantra. She certainly would have made better use of it. So I think the lesson learned out of that again is, if we have got something so valuable with us, use it at the right time, at the right place, for the right purpose, rather than misusing this for the wrong place, wrong time, for the wrong purpose. Yeah? Yes, sir. Is one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that Lord's pastime is eternal. The cycle of Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga is also cyclical. So what may happen in one particular cycle, it's not necessarily verbatim repeated in the next. From cycle to cycle it can change. So it's ongoing. The healer is ongoing. So when something is ongoing, then it's not so much necessary to understand what is the starting point. The important thing is, what is the lesson learned out of it, and how we can apply it in our life. That's how I see it. Okay. Anything else?
Just a quick question on a statement.
Yeah.
You said that in regards to the incarnations, the essence is on the purpose and not on the form.
Yeah.
If you could explain that, because it sounds...
Yeah. Well, if you see the purpose of the incarnation for each of them, Narasimhadev comes for the particular purpose of saving Prahlad Maharaj in that particular form. So, the form is there, but the purpose of the Lord to come down is not so much to display that he can take multifarious forms, and he's beyond the law of material laws and all that. That is there. But the main reason he comes down is not so much to exhibit, you know, that he is beyond the laws. You know, he's got his own maya dakshana prakriti. He controls the laws rather than the laws controlling him. But more so because he comes down to protect his devotees and to attract respect to Godhead. So Bhakta Vatsila. He comes, the purpose of the Lord's incarnation is to attract respect. And there is the same purpose that Lord Ram demonstrates, or even Krishna demonstrates.
Isn't that purpose fulfilled by the form itself?
The Lord could have fulfilled purposes in different forms for the same reason. Yeah. Let's say, Vara Avatar. Okay, we can say from a material point of view that the boar is there so he can dig the planet out of, you know, the ocean and restore it where it is. So that form is there. Maybe. He could have done that in any other form as well. He could have done it in a human form as well. Because in a human form he lifted the Govardhan. He didn't take the form of a boar to lift Govardhan. And he didn't certainly hire any cranes and all that. He could have taken the form of a crane maybe. He can do whatever in whatever form.
But that's why the form becomes celebrated, because he chose that form. He
definitely. No doubt about it at all. All I'm saying is the purpose is important. Is more important. I'm not saying that the form is not important. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is the purpose is important. The purpose is primary. Because the purpose is to attract us. When sages of Naimisharanya asked Sudha Goswami, what are the incarnations of the Lord? The focus, if you look in their response, is not so much what the form the Lord has taken. But the fundamental answer is that the Lord takes avatar to attract respect to Godhead. And that is the purpose. Parintarnaya sadhana vinashaya chatusritam. Krishna does not say, when he tells the three reasons for incarnation, he does not say that, by the way, for different reasons I take different forms. That is given. The Lord is, what's the word, multi-talented, omnipotent, ambidextrous,
multitasking,
yeah. Multifarious. He can do anything in any form. Certainly it's important and it's glorious. But the purpose is to attract us back to God. That's my understanding. Anything else? No? Okay. Rantra Srimad Mahabhagavan. Shri Prabhupada.